From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of a pre-recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with author Rod Dreher. Let's now join Hank and Rod in their conversation.
I think, Hank, the most important lesson of this book, and these are lessons from my interviews with Christians, Catholics, Protestants, and Orthodox Christians who suffered through real communism. But the most important lesson they taught me, Hank, is that we have to be willing to suffer. We have to learn how to suffer. I remember standing about a year ago on a street in Moscow near the Kremlin, talking to an elderly Baptist man, a white-haired gentleman named Yuri Sipko. Now, in Russia, the Baptists have it really rough. Our people, the Orthodox people, have not been kind to them over the years. And Yuri Sipko grew up in a Baptist community, and I think they were in Siberia. And all the men were taken away by Stalin to the prison camps. The women had to raise their children to be faithful in horrible, horrible times. Anyway, Yuri Sipko had told me stories that his community went through and ways that they had to learn how to be real disciples under persecution. And he told me standing out in the street after our interview that I needed to go back home to America and tell the church, you've got to be prepared to suffer, that if you are not prepared to suffer and even die for Jesus Christ, then your faith is nothing but hypocrisy. And he even told me that in Russia, some of the evangelicals of the younger generation are now going back to take up the ways of life of their ancestors who lived that way under communism because they have seen what capitalism and liberty that has become license to be to lust, license to be worldly. They've seen what it has done to people, and they know that if they're going to hold on to the faith, they're going to have to live in strongly countercultural ways, even though communism ended 30 years ago. That was just a striking thing for me to learn.
Do you think COVID-19 is a quintessential example of how easily we can give up our liberties within this milieu, within this last 10 months? It seems like we are progressively willing to give up not only liberties, but common sense itself.
You know, this is a hard question for me. It's one I've been thinking about a lot because when COVID first came, like most other Christians, I was upset by the fact that we couldn't go to church, although our bishops in the Orthodox Church in America changed eventually and let us start coming back to church in limited numbers. But I was really upset by it and didn't want to do any of this. But I did it because I have a weak immune system and I didn't want to put myself and my family at risk. But I had to stop and think, Hank, about the lessons I had learned from men and women who had been to prison in the communist period, how they got through prison. I fell back on this man, I tell his story in Live Not by Lies, Dr. Sylvester Krcmary. He was a Slovak physician, a young man who was part of Father Kolakovich's family. And the secret police pulled him off the streets in 1951, threw him in a car to take him to prison. And he writes in his memoir that he laughed at the secret police because he knew that finally he was going to be given a chance, he, Dr. Krcmary, to share in Christ's suffering. And he said, I realize that this ought to be something rightly that brings me joy. And it made the secret police so angry. Anyway, Dr. Krcmary wrote about how when he was put into prison at the beginning, he had to resolve that he was never going to feel sorry for himself. He rather saw himself as God's probe, as trying to learn what he could from the prison experience so he could deepen his own conversion and extend the kingdom and to minister to other people in prison. So this is how he got through 10 years of prison, by seeing it as a chance to grow spiritually. And it wasn't just an abstraction for him. This was a man who was being tortured, and yet he knew that he could not let himself hate his torturers or the devil would win. Well, thinking about us in COVID sitting on the couch watching Netflix, it's not the same thing as a communist prison, but the principle is there. The idea that you know, we have to look at what's happening to us and try to understand where the blessing might be in it. And that was a really hard thing to do. But I think that there's definitely been some cases in some states where the state has clearly overreached. I'm thinking of California in particular, where people can't go to church, but they could go to other secular places. But for me, the main lesson from the COVID thing has been learning how to abide without losing our peace. Yes, we need to stand up when our liberties are being unreasonably taken away from us, unreasonably challenged. But if we're going to fight this in the long term, fight this soft totalitarianism, we're going to have to learn how to be still and know that God is in control and not be discouraged by what's happening to us, not allow ourselves to be overtaken by fear or anger, because that will just unhorse us right there.
Yeah, beautiful. I mentioned I want to get back to the Bolsheviks, which you talked about earlier on. So here you have in 1917, a revolution led by an angry Bolshevik named Vladimir Lenin. And he, in the process of this revolution, proves that under certain circumstances, you can have a dedicated minority gaining absolute power over the masses, and partly because the masses are indifferent. And today we have what happened in 1917 memorialized in song by another Lenin in 1971. So it's imagining something that we don't know that much about, because as you say, people don't even know oftentimes what a gulag is when you talk about it.
No, they don't. You know, when I was in Moscow doing my interviews there, at the end of my interviews, I'd spent the past 3 or 4 days talking to men who had, some of them had been tortured in prison, who had seen massacres, all kinds of things. It was just horrifying. I went to dinner that last night at the home of a Russian Orthodox family, just an ordinary family living in an apartment in suburban Moscow. And I made the mistake, although I guess it wasn't really a mistake, but I said early in the conversation, I just don't understand how anybody in Russia could have fallen for what the Bolsheviks were preaching. Well, the father at the end of the table looked at me and said, "You don't understand? Well, let me tell you." And he goes back to the 17th century and starts telling about the long history of Russia and the way the poor and the peasantry were mistreated, exploited, put into serfdom, and so on and so forth. And he gets up to the late 19th century, early 20th century. He said, by the time the Bolsheviks came along, people were so fed up with everything they had been put through that they were willing to believe anything that offered them relief. He said, the Bolsheviks were wrong. I mean, this was an Orthodox Christian. He said, but you can see where they came from, because so many people in power in that society had become indifferent to the cries of the poor and the oppressed. And this, the man was trying to help me understand, this is something that we have to be aware of, too, as Christians trying to fight soft totalitarianism, that if we allow social injustice and suffering to go on without being addressed, then we open up the space for angry extremists who know what they believe and who will exploit the suffering of people to get their power. One of the things, too, that we need to take for the Bolshevik example is the power of elites. You know, in Russia, the Marxists had been working for decades to try to get a revolution going and had gotten nowhere until the 1890s. There was a great famine in Russia in 1891-92. The Tsarist government did a terrible job of famine relief. And that was the first time that most ordinary people, or people in the middle classes at least, began to wonder, you know what, maybe this system is bad. Maybe what the Marxists are saying has some truth to it. Also at that time, the intellectuals became completely obsessed with Marxism. The artists became obsessed with Marxism. And a lot of people, this is something really interesting, a lot of people wanted so badly to stay in touch with their children that when their children became Marxist, they went along with it. They didn't become Marxists themselves, but they at least became neutral on the question of Marxism. And eventually, Lenin seized power after the system collapsed after the First World War. Lenin seized power not because he represented a majority of people, but because he had the elites on his side. similarly in this country, this is one thing I want people to understand, is that even though most people, most of the listeners of this podcast, probably the people they know in their lives don't go in for critical race theory or transgenderism or anything like that, but it doesn't matter because the elite culture in America has already bought into this. The gatekeepers into the professions, medicine, law, corporate executives, media, and so on and so forth, they do believe in this stuff, and they will not let people into those elite circles if they don't affirm it themselves. And this is something that you will not see written about or broadcast on the media, not because they're trying to hide it necessarily, but because they already accept it as right and normal and good. So if we ourselves, we Christians, we who want to live by the truth and live faithfully, we're going to have to make the call one day. Are we willing to sacrifice middle-class professional success and access to the cultural elites for the sake of our faith?
We'll pick up Hank's conversation with Rod Dreher in just a few moments. One of the biggest mistakes people make is assuming that totalitarianism can't happen in their own country. Many American Christians are making that very mistake today, sleepwalking through the erosion of our freedoms. The new book, Live Not by Lies, by Rod Dreher, will snap you out of the slumber and equip you for the long resistance. To receive your copy of Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless, natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer Book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer Book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer Book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man with Hank Hanegraaff. Let's rejoin Hank and Rod in their conversation.
We ourselves, we Christians, we're going to have to make the call one day. Are we willing to sacrifice middle-class professional success and access to the cultural elites for the sake of our faith? It's going to be that stark. And I'm afraid that given the fact that so much of American Christianity has not been about living counterculturally, but rather baptizing middle-class preferences, that a lot of us are not going to pass that test when it's put to us.
Yeah, and you note in your book, and you've talked about this extensively at other forums as well, that there are parallels between a declining U.S. and the pre-revolutionary Russia. In fact, these parallels are unnervingly close.
Definitely. The collapse of faith in institutions was a big one. I just talked a little bit about that. The collapse of the artistic and literary elite into lasciviousness, into sexual radicalism was a big one. I was astonished to learn in reading one history of the Russian Revolution that around 1905 and thereabouts, Satan himself became an icon for the artistic elite because they saw him as an individualist and as the first rebel. So you had people, they didn't believe that Satan was real, but they saw him as an iconic figure. And these are things that are happening now all around us. We had a guy that came to our church a couple of years ago, a young man, to our Orthodox church here in Baton Rouge, where I live. And he had come out of an occult circle here in the city, Aleister Crowley, you know, the dread magician of the early 20th century. It was part of Crowley's sex magic religion. And this young man, he had been saved out of it and wanted to know peace and to know Christ. And I remember him telling me that the things that they used to look forward to, that Aleister Crowley had prophesied would happen in the future once the world accepted Lucifer, these were things that were already happening now and were considered totally mainstream, especially the sexualization of all things. Well, this is what it was like in pre-revolutionary Russia, this radical decadence, and it's absolutely shocking to see it happening around us right now. Christians cannot miss the signs of the times. I write in the book about how Hannah Arendt, who's one of the great political theorists of the 20th century, she wrote a book in the early 50s called The Origins of Totalitarianism. In this book, she examined Nazi Germany and communist Russia to try to figure out what it was about the social conditions in both places that allowed totalitarianism to conquer these great nations. And she came up with a list of pre-totalitarian characteristics. The main thing that both Russia and Germany had in common before totalitarianism took over was mass loneliness. People had become atomized from each other. Their faith in the church, their faith in the institutions of their society and their government had been shattered, and they didn't know where to turn. Totalitarianism spoke to them in their loneliness and offered them a sense of brotherhood, a purpose, and meaning. It was all a lie. It was a Nazi lie, and it was a communist lie, but it spoke to felt needs of mass man. It was also the case there that people had stopped knowing who they could trust, and they had started believing that what was true was what felt right to them. They didn't care if it was provably false. If it felt right to them, they accepted it as true. The abandonment of a search for truth and the confidence that truth can be known is a precursor to totalitarianism. Now, if you don't see that happening in our society right now, then you're absolutely blind.
It's kind of counterintuitive, though, because you have Marx pontificating that what he was espousing was based in science, and you have government constantly saying the very same thing today, that they follow science. But all the while, they seem to be completely denigrating the very tenets of the scientific method, which really constitutes questioning rather than capitulating.
Yeah, it's all an ideological game. I think one of the most important lectures I ever heard in my life came about 12 years ago. I was at Cambridge in England and heard a historian, Dame Gillian Beer, talk about how Darwinism was taken up in the 19th century by different political factions in Victorian England. She said the imperialist took Darwin's findings and said, see, this just goes to show that science proves that the British are destined to rule the world because the survival of the fittest, the strongest always conquer, etc. She said the abolitionist, on the other hand, said, see, this just goes to show that we are all brothers deep down and that racism is wrong. Science proves it, and so on and so forth. Dangillian's point was simply that scientific knowledge is deeply contested, and we should not accept it when people say, well, the science shows this, because people, even without knowing what they're doing, they construe as scientific fact things that aren't really scientifically factual, but rather just a rationalization for their own political beliefs.
You know, truth is on the altar in general. In your book, you talk about the New York Times 1619 Project and the core claims of this project, that the Patriots fought Revolutionary War to preserve slavery. So you have a myth that's being perpetuated in thousands of classrooms, really, around the country. And if you listen to these myths long enough, your whole mind becomes disoriented. I was looking at some material for Christopher Columbus Day. And so I went to the web and I started Googling. And I went through pages and pages and pages, and all the pages were the exact same narrative. The narrative turns out to be a distortion of what Columbus actually wrote in documents and diaries. And the distortion is made with ellipses improperly used. And the same thing's going on with this 1619 project. Revising America's national identity by making race hatred, as you alluded to earlier, central to the nation's founding.
That's right. And that is an example I cite in the book of people willing to believe things that are lies because it suits our ideological preferences. This is something that the New York Times launched, gosh, I guess over a year ago, but saying that, trying to challenge, and the word they use is reframe American history, not around the Declaration of Independence, but chattel slavery. And they stated, as you've just explained, that actually America was founded for the sole purpose of defending chattel slavery. Well, when that came out, we had left-wing historians, including Sean Willens at Princeton, say, this is not true. You know, of course, we had slavery when the Declaration was signed and the Constitution was signed, and we eventually had to fight a civil war to sort that out. But America was not founded for the sake of preserving slavery. This is a lie. Well, it's a lie that's gone very far. The woman who was behind the project, Nicole Hannah Jones, won the Pulitzer Prize for this lie. As you said, it's now in thousands of elementary schools. The Pulitzer Center has pushed this onto elementary schools. Oprah Winfrey and movie studios signed a big deal with the 1619 Project founders to make pop culture about it. This is how history is being taught and will be taught to future generations who, if they accept this as being real history, will suddenly see all of American life and the American founding as evil, as illegitimate. That is the precursor to revolution. There's no two ways about it.
Before I forget, I want you to talk for a moment about the image on the cover of your book. It's intriguing. It's also very instructive.
Right. You know, whenever you write a book, usually the cover art is something that the author works out with the art department at the publisher. I had several versions of this cover come to me by the art department, and they all look like kind of a generic inspirational book. And I said, that's not what this book is about. This book is about taking the experiences of people fighting communism in the communist bloc, taking these experiences and making them work for Christians in the here and now. And I told them that I wanted to use Soviet expressionist art. Soviet expressionist art was a form of illustration that the Soviets used in their propaganda posters early on in the revolution because they wanted the revolution to seem very modern and fresh, very, very striking art. Well, I asked them to take that style and create a cover out of it, make it look like a Soviet propaganda poster. And that's what they've done. On the cover of the book, you see a church facade tilting at an angle and the figure of a man pushing uphill, carrying a cross uphill. And then you see the title, Live Not by Lies. The idea here is to take Soviet propaganda motif, but repurpose it for Christian use. I think it's really striking. It's in black and red. I've had some people who lived under communism, immigrants to this country, say they didn't like it because it caused them to feel a sense of chill. But I wanted it to convey to American readers, and I think it does this, that this is about something really urgent and active. This is not about, here's something gentle for you to read to sort of bliss you out spiritually. This is a call to action.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift, Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents by Rod Dreher, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The preceding program was pre-recorded. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Are you the product of millions of years of unguided, purposeless natural processes? Or are you created in the image of a loving God? Faced with the overwhelming scorn of evolutionary proselytizers, it can be hard to articulate the truth about God's creative work. And even among faithful Christians, many misconceptions linger. The Creation Answer book by Hank Hanegraaff puts answers to the most hotly debated origins questions right at your fingertips, giving you clarity and understanding. Learn to articulate the truth about our origins clearly and compassionately when you request your copy of the Creation Answer book or listen to Hank's insightful answers with the unabridged audiobook version on CD. Receive your copy of the Creation Answer book or the audiobook on CD from the Christian Research Institute when you call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.